She was found on the side of the road. And the sad thing is, my grandparents and myself both traveled that road that morning. We saw the cop cars and we didn't even comprehend what was going on. We didn't get the news yet. The body hadn't been identified. So they drove past their daughter and I drove past my mom, not even knowing what happened.
Welcome back to Missing. I am Tim, here today with Lance. Lance, how are you today?
I am doing so well today, Tim. Really, the question is, how are you?
I am doing well as well. Really, couldn't be better.
And well, great.
In this, and for this episode, Lance, we speak with a woman named Carly Bodine, and her mom, Karen Bodine, was murdered. This is an unsolved murder case, and Karen was found murdered January 22nd, 2007. And this story takes place in Olympia, Washington. And Carly has been an incredible advocate for her mom's case.
And Carly is sort of unofficially joined by her friend, her mom's friend as well, Bernie. So you can hear the passion in both of their voices. They've really championed this cause to bring justice to her mom's murder, her mom's brutal murder, and doing everything from fundraising to candlelight vigils to the amazing billboard campaign that they've aggressively placed throughout the community, including right outside the front door for the most part of the person who they think is the most likely suspect. And Carly is just like a force, like taking flyers all over the place, never leaving home without these flyers. She is determined to figure out what happened to her mom and finally just bring some closure as much as she can to her and her family.
Absolutely. And you may have heard of this case if you attend CrimeCon or some of their offshoots. CrowdSolve was one that they did in Seattle, and they discussed this case. So we talk about, maybe we talk about that a little bit, but really her efforts in pushing this case forward is just admirable. And she's on Facebook. There's a Facebook group called Justice for My Mom, Karen Bodine. And they're having a vigil on January 22nd, 2022. So you can check out some more information for that on the Facebook page or on their website. It's KarenBodine.com.
And if anyone has any information about Karen Bodine's murder, please contact the Thurston County Sheriff's Office at 360-786-5500.
And Lance, you mentioned these billboards. Carly has paid for these herself. So they are raising some money. They have a Venmo page that you can search on Venmo for Carly Bodine, and that will help them erect more billboards in the area.
And feel free to swing by the old website at crawlspace-media.com. Also, if you just happen to be around the review area of wherever you listen to podcasts, throw a 5-star review on. Why not?
Okay, so I hope you really enjoy this episode. Please follow us on social media at MissingCSM. Thanks a lot for listening.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast today. Carly Bodine, how are you?
I am very well. What about yourself?
We are doing great. Thank you for coming on. This is a conversation that I've been looking forward to ever since Tim said that he was connecting with you to get you on the show. I'm just in awe of what you've done, and we'll get into your story and your mother very soon. But I just wanted to put that out there that we love having people like yourself on, those who take charge and really like pick up the gauntlet and become an advocate for something that's important. So well done.
That means a lot to me. Like every time I hear someone say like, good job or thank you, it's like, yes, because I've been shouting from the rooftops like ever since this happened, and it's finally getting somewhere. So it's like, yes, my hard work has paid off. So I mean thank you and everything to you guys. Like, it's an honor and a privilege to be here, and I'm privileged that you guys get to help share the awareness of my mom. Like, yeah, woohoo, you know, you're part of it now too.
Yes, and we're happy to be. And you reached out to us on TikTok, and yeah. And that was really great. We have only been on TikTok for a short period of time, and so we have not.
Me too, yeah. Not to interrupt, but I am brand new to TikTok. So for all the listeners, just bear with me. I'm still learning it. Like.
Us well, too.
Us too. And we have some partners that we work with, and Tim especially was like, you got to get on TikTok. He's trying to get me to do more videos. And I'm like, what is that going to do? What good's going to come of that? And then look, like literally like a week later, we're here with you. So it's like almost instantaneous.
I got like Sarah Turney to get me on TikTok too. And I was like, what the heck? Are you kidding me? Like, the first week I was on there. Yeah. So, I mean, it's opened up a lot of new avenues and new platforms, and that's what I'm always trying to do. I'll probably be at CrimeCon in Vegas in April too. So I'm really excited about that. I just went to the Texas one just a few months ago in June, July too. So, I mean, I'm trying to make the rounds. I'm trying to do my thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's really great, your advocacy efforts. And again, it's inspiring. And of course, we are talking about a very tragic case, the story of your mom, Karen Bodine. She has been gone almost 15 years now.
Yeah, January 22nd will be 15 years. Yeah, it's the 15-year anniversary, sadly.
And can you tell us a little bit about what happened to her?
She was found on the side of the road. I wouldn't exactly call it a ditch. It's more like a gravel pit quarry thing. But it's also a place where like local people will throw like poached deer carcasses and tires and cars. Like it was a bad spot for her to be found in. I mean, she was literally dumped, you know, you hear dumping bodies, but like, that's what happened. Like she was literally dumped at a dump site essentially. And she was found on the side of the road. And the sad thing is my grandparents and myself both traveled that road that morning. They were off to a real estate meeting and I was off to school. We saw the cop cars and we didn't even comprehend what was going on. We didn't get the news yet. The body hadn't been identified. So they drove past their daughter and I drove past my mom, not even knowing what happened. Real quick here, we've got Bernie. This is my mom's friend she went to school with. I'm here. I hang out with a lot of my mom's friends. That's why I get a lot of my work done. Like they help me a lot. Sadly, she was found naked, strangled on the side of the road, resting on a car seat. Like not like a baby car seat, but like the back of a car seat that was removed. Her head was propped up on the seat and then her body was displayed.
And ligature around.
And there was, yeah, and there's a ligature around her neck.
That's absolutely tragic. And you were passing by that scene and didn't know what you were passing by.
Mm-hmm.
And how old was your mother?
She was 37.
And 37.
That's really hitting home right now because I'm 33. So it's like, wow. You know, that's only a few years older than me. Like, I mean, it's been hard ever since it happened, but now that I'm getting closer to the age, it really hits home how young she really was. I mean, I was 18. I had just turned 18. I was a senior in high school. I thought I was a grown-up and I was an adult. I was just a little kid back then. Like, oh my goodness. There's the saying that time heals all wounds, and that's just not true. That's not accurate. I mean, it's been almost 15 years and this wound is still wide open.
isn't that just kind of something that people say just because they personally probably haven't experienced something like that? Time heals all wounds, but you know, they probably weren't passing by at 18 years old the scene of their own mother's murder.
Exactly.
That has not been solved. And that's your mission. That's your cause.
And that's the thing. And before I got the billboards up and everything, which has brought a lot of awareness, but I have flyers that I pass out literally everywhere. When I go to the grocery store, when I go to the bank, when I go to the dollar store, when I go take my dog at the dog park, wherever, you know, go out to eat, I park as far away as I can. I put a flyer on every single car. And then I have flyers in my purse and I hand them out to the people inside too. And usually they're like, oh, I've seen the, now that the billboard's up, people are like, oh, I've seen the billboard or I've seen something. But before, people were like, I've either never heard of this case, or I thought it was solved. I heard about it and I thought it was solved years ago because no one ever talks about it. Or people are like, I'm not interested, go away. And it's like, really? But and it's like, okay, whatever, screw you. You got one on your car anyways, so.
Good. I like that that attitude. People need to know.
I never thought I'd be in this position. I never thought I'd be speaking with you guys or anything else. Like, no one thinks your family member, a close family member, is going to be a murder victim or a trauma victim or victim of like violent crime. Like, you never think it's going to happen to you or your family. That's the thing. It's my mom and I used to sit together and watch Cops and watch the ID channel and watch, what is it, Unsolved Mysteries, that old show or whatever, you know, like never knowing that that would be my life eventually. Like, I'd be the one sitting here talking about my mom on shows. Like, no one fathoms that. You never think it will happen to you until it's too late, and it has. And that's what I want to get across to people, is that it can happen to anyone.
You're so dedicated to fighting for the cause now. What was it like back then in 2007 when it happened? You were a high school senior?
Yeah, I had just turned 18. I was a high school senior. I actually ended up wearing my graduation dress to my mom's funeral. So when it came time to graduation, it was a little different wearing the dress. It wasn't so exciting.
That's a really puts things into perspective type thought.
It really does. I was thinking about taking a year off or going to college or whatever, and then all of a sudden your mom's murdered, and it's like, whoa, okay. You know, yeah, you think about things a lot differently. I was just 18. I thought I was grown up and knew all the answers back then. I'm sure everybody does when you're 18, you know? And then something like that happens and you're like, oh.
How did your friends treat you afterward? You know, you're 18 and planning your graduation, and I'm sure there was talk about what we're doing after graduation and everything. What was it like then?
I ended up not even going on the senior trip just because I just didn't feel up to it, you know? It made everything different. Like, don't get me wrong, I still had my good friends and everything, but and I went to a private Christian school, which was really tiny. So, I mean, I don't think we even had 100 students. I think I graduated with like 20 or 26 kids. Like, it was tiny. So the second you walk in the doors, people are looking at you and, you know, you can hear, you know, people are talking, and it's not necessarily bad, but, you know, word spreads fast. And then like you would find out that the history teacher said, oh, be careful because Carly's coming in next class. Everybody be nice to her. And it's like, oh, gosh, you know, I'm that girl.
Well, they should be nice to you anyway, for the record, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I had a good high school experience, but I mean, everybody kind of coddled me and everything, and was like, I don't know. It was definitely life changing. Or like when I got my first job at Burger King, you know, when I was working, people would be like, "What are you doing for Mother's Day?" I'd say, "Oh, hanging out with my grandma, or going and buying flowers for my mom." They'd be like, "Why?" I'm like, "Well, because my mom's dead." And they'd be like, "Oh, how'd she die? Like a car accident?" And it's like, "Well, no, she was murdered and it's unsolved." And then people were like, ugh. You know.
So people would treat you differently?
Mm-hmm.
A little more sensitive around you, or like afraid to say the wrong thing or something?
You know, there's the your mom jokes or whatever, which don't bother me. I mean, I think they're funny, like everybody else does. But then people like wouldn't say those jokes around me, or they're like, you know, it's like, dude, it's okay. Like, I'm not going to go burst into tears because you told a joke. Like, it's okay, you guys. Like, yeah, I definitely got treated different afterwards.
And you're certainly doing a lot of work in keeping your mom's name out there and trying to find the killer. But what was the investigation like in the aftermath, the immediate aftermath of the murder? Two parts to it, I guess, the investigation and also any media coverage that happened in the aftermath.
As politely and professionally as I can say, is the media and the police absolutely did not do their job, and they botched their investigation and everything in the beginning. They were a complete letdown and failure. They victim shamed. They told false stories. They put a mugshot of her from 1997 for a small misdemeanor up in the paper instead of asking the family for a recent photo. They wouldn't even ask us like for interviews or anything. I mean, it was disgusting. And because of how the media handled it, the police didn't handle it well, and the public didn't care. And it was literally set aside. Finally, when we got chosen for CrimeCon, they literally had to go to the basement and blow the dust off the case file to get into it.
You mentioned CrimeCon.
It was the first crowd solve ever, actually. Yes.
How does it feel to know that they had to go to the basement and blow the dust off the files and had no regard for your emotions when it was put out a mugshot, for example, about your mom? And
the original detective was about to retire. We'd gone through three or four different detectives. Yeah, I mean, the police system back in our local community was pretty corrupt. They hadn't cleaned house yet. They just let things slide. Like, it was, there's so many things that should have been taken into evidence originally in my mom's case that was not, that's coming back to haunt us now, especially with all the developments and changes in forensic science. The prosecutors wouldn't even get a hold of us. Like, the week before CrowdSolve or CrimeCon or whatever contacted me, I had called the Olympian and asked for them to do a story. I'm like, you guys, it's been forever. Story you did was false. Can we please just like bring awareness, you know? And they told me flat out, no. And then I did this CrimeCon CrowdSolve thing, and the Olympian called and they're like, hey, we'd like to interview you. And excuse my French, but I said, well, you guys are jackasses because I just called a week ago and you refused me. Get over here in a half hour and you get your interview. Because, I mean, it was my chance to do it, but I also gave them I'm like my mother. I'm passionate. Whether it's good or bad, I'll tell you how I feel. I got that from my mom.
I want to go back to something you said right off the bat when you answered the question, which was they victim shamed her. Why were they victim shaming her?
They called her homeless and a prostitute. She was never, ever homeless. Not to say anything bad about homeless or people or prostitutes or anything. I want it to be known that was not the case. And that was part of the problem that's what the media and everything wrote. And what, Brittany?
Well, in the first article that came out in the Olympian here, instead of just putting the facts, they put her arrest records in there. They stated that she was homeless. They made her seem like she was just this big drug addict that was on the streets. It made it seem like it was her fault. And that's the victim shaming.
And that wasn't true at all, because she was just living at home right before that. She had just moved back in with her boyfriend. They had just gotten in a fight on that Friday. And so she left the house and she was hanging out literally a few blocks down the street from her boyfriend's house. At this guy named Jim Hunt's house, which is a person of interest, by the way.
And the last person to see her was also a police officer.
Yeah, the last person
that saw her was a police officer.
Well, last official person that's reported saw her was a police officer. That's how she ended up getting identified, actually, because it was an unknown female when they found her on the side of the road when we were passing, when my grandparents and I were passing. They were calling even Grays Harbor, Pierce County, Mason County, which are our surrounding counties to Thurston County, which we live in, trying to figure out who this person was. And the police officer that had just had the last contact with her, which was a welfare check, because she was walking down the street, and this is January 22nd in Washington around the Olympia Lacey area, which people don't know, it can actually get pretty cold here. I mean, like during the day, it might not even break freezing. And I think she just had like a windbreaker jacket on or just like a light jacket. So someone had called as a welfare check, like, hey, I think this woman's dressed a little too cold for the weather. And the cop, you know, went and checked on her. And she's like, nope, I'm fine. You know, leave me alone. And then I think that was in the afternoon. And then she hung out with her friend or, you know, her boyfriend's friends or whatever that time period. And then Monday morning, she was found not just dead, but killed, murdered.
Really ridiculous. I mean, the reason why she was victim shamed is because they thought she was something, which isn't even the right reason. Like, it doesn't matter. Okay, so what if she was someone who was in the sex trade?
It doesn't matter if she was. It's still a person. She was still a sister, a mother, a daughter to somebody. It doesn't matter. That's what I'm saying. I don't care if she was homeless or a prostitute. That's not the case. That's what I'm trying to make clear. But it doesn't matter if she was. You still should not have done that.
Yeah. And it's the mentality. Like, we're not living in the 50s. This happened in 2007. Like, it's pretty modern, right? I mean, you should have, like, I guess, more of a progressive or modern way of thinking that even if you were to find somebody and you had some notion that they might have been involved in something, like, it's not even an excuse for that. Like,
the family on the side saying, like, hey, we'd love to do an interview or give you pictures, and the media is ignoring us.
And can you tell us a little bit about your mom? What was she like?
Oh gosh, that's a can of worms. She was amazing. She was a jack of all trades. She was funny. She was super into fashion. She was into sports. She had quite the passionate temper. She lit up the room the second she walked in. Like,
she was a big presence.
Her presence just consumed her laugh. Okay, so her laugh. Okay, it was very cute and adorable, but when she really got going, she would snort. But she was the only one that could pull it off and not make it look dumb. Like, it was cute when she did it.
And
like,
she'd always throw her head back.
Yeah, and she would throw her head back and she would snort. Like, and it was just like, oh my gosh. Like, and you could hear it from probably a quarter mile away. And she could whistle like none other. I don't know how she learned it, probably from my grandpa, but she could do the whatever whistle or everything. Like, and it was loud as all get out. She would sing. She knew all the old good songs. Like, of course, she liked Metallica and all that. But one day I was driving around with her and the radio was on and Green Day was on. And all of a sudden she turned up the radio and started singing. And I was like, my mom likes Green Day? She's singing to Green Day? That's so cool.
Green Day transcends generations.
Also, exactly, right? And I also thought that, I don't know, maybe it was just how everybody did it back in the day, but when I was a kid, for Halloween, my mom always made my costumes. Like, she sewed them and made them and everything. And I thought that's what every kid did. And everybody would be like, where'd you get your costume? I'm like, my mom made it. Duh. Didn't your mom make yours? Like, I just thought that's what was the thing until I got older and I was like, oh, you buy costumes.
That's amazing. And you're with an individual named Bernie, who you said is your mom's friend.
Mm-hmm.
And you said that you hang out with your mom's friends a lot. Did that happen pretty much immediately after the murder?
Some yes and some no. Like, especially now that I'm campaigning and everything. Like, I have Bernie, my good friend, and then Colleen Esham is the other one. They are my two main, I mean, there's probably four or five or six girls that I hang out with, but Bernie and Colleen are the main ones, and they really support me and they help me with the podcast and everything. Colleen always comes down from, I do honking waves and I do vigils, not just for my family, but for all the local families like Nancy Moyer, Logan Schindelman, Matthew Anfelt, just to name a few. I mean, there's 30, so I can go on, but we do events like that and they come and they participate and they help. Colleen came and helped the garage sale. Bernie's probably coming to Las Vegas with me for Crime Con, because when I went to Texas, it was my first time ever traveling. And so Colleen came with me on the airplane and kind of showed me what to do and everything. So Bernie will probably come with me to Vegas.
I got to say, despite the tragedy and your seemingly uphill battle to get this out there and get some sort of closure, it really is heartening to see what you've made of it with your mom's friends. And like you said, you do the honking waves and you work with other people, and you're an advocate for others, because you could go the other way.
I've seen that too. And I've contacted families where I'm like, hey, you know, like, I'll help tell your story. I'll give you more awareness. And they're just like, no, no. And I'm like, don't you want answers? Don't you want to know? Like, don't you want to make a fuss? Like, I haven't shut up since it started, like 14, almost 15 years ago. But finally, with the advances in technology and YouTube and TikTok and all that, you got to remember, all that didn't exist back when all this happened. Like, my sister and I shared a big old block cell phone that you couldn't call people till after 7. There was no texting, like, there was no Uber, GPS, like, all that stuff didn't exist back when all this happened. You know, there was no iPads and tablets and a lot back then. People forget that, like, and that's only 14, 15 years ago.
And it really seems like you're taking advantage of most of the things that are out there for you to work with, you know.
Learn, yep.
CrimeCon and CrowdSolve is a huge step. Obviously, podcasts and just going out and contacting people on your own to appear is such a big step. And I don't know what that would take emotionally to get to that point.
I get told no all the time. And all that means is, okay, wait a few months and call again and ask harder. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've learned you have to have tough skin to do this. And, mm-hmm. and I've learned that. So I've gotten some harsh responses of, no, we're not interested. Or the Olympian has flat out told me, no, we want a better story. Wait till you get better news. That's our hometown local newspaper, by the way.
Yes, that's what is confusing to me. It's like you want people to know what's going on in your community.
We're in the state capital.
Yeah, this is the capital of Washington, by the way, and they're just completely ignoring it. And another thing is, my grandpa, her dad, was a firefighter, and then he was fire commissioner, which is higher than the chief, for years and years and years, even up at the time of her death. And they pretty much turned their back to him when all this happened. And I mean, like, he served his community for almost 40 years, and then his daughter is murdered and you guys don't care. He helped with suicides and wrecks and baby deliveries and what else, and you guys just turn your back? Like,
when you're referring to people turning their backs, who specifically, the media or the community itself?
The police, the community, yeah, anyone.
And we'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey. My name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Thanks to our sponsors, and now we're back to the program. It seems like, if I'm not mistaken, there's a new detective that you're working with now that
yes.
sort of changed the narrative.
Really quick, not to confuse anyone, there was a Detective Hamilton originally that was on the case, and he was an old guy, and he has since retired. He's a jerko. We don't like him. There's a new detective named Mickey Hamilton. He is young, and he is on the job. He is actually not technically assigned to the case. No one is assigned to the case, but he takes it upon himself to work on it all the time. Like, if I call him, if I have to wait 2 days for a phone call back, that's amazing. He usually calls me back before then. Like, we just talked yesterday, and we talked 2 weeks prior to that. He's the only detective in 14, almost 15 years that actually returns phone calls. When a detective got changed, because we've gone through 3 or 4 of them, our family wasn't even notified, usually.
Did I miss something? How many detectives have they gone through?
4 or 5 different ones, and they don't even notify the family. Oh, and there's been many times where I show up at someone's house, and I'm sitting there questioning them, and then a detective shows up and starts questioning. And it's like, how did I get here first before you? With all your resources and all your everything, how did I get here first and start questioning people? Answer me that.
What was your experience like immediately after with law enforcement? Did they come to your house and talk to the family and gather as much information as possible?
They pretty much notified us and left. Here's the sad thing is my brother, which his room is close to the front door, was sitting there watching the news on silent, watching the story of his mom as the detectives were knocking on the door, telling the family. So it was on the news. And it was on the radio and everything before we were notified.
And when he's watching that on the news, he's not realizing that who it is, right? That it's his mom.
Yeah, he was like 12 years old. He didn't understand.
What's the community like?
It's grown since I was younger, but it's still very small. Lacey, Olympia, and Tumwater all kind of meld together. If you're not from here, you don't know where the borders end and start. So it's all kind of one little town. I guess word travels fast. You can say, like, the one day I don't wear makeup and go to the grocery store is the day I run into everybody, of course. But it has grown. Like, it is bigger now. But if you're born and raised here, like me and a lot of the other families, everybody knows everybody. Or if you don't know someone, your mom and dad know their aunt, uncle, or whatever. So it's very small.
And tell us a little bit more about this Jim Hunt character that you mentioned.
What would you like to know?
Well, why is he considered a person of interest?
He is considered a person of interest because his house was the last place that she was seen at. The people that were at that house were the last people that she was seen with. He has been, what's the right word? Off-putting on answering questions. Like, there'll be a scheduled date and time for him to come in, and he'll have some excuse not to and everything. And now he's trying to probably like go off to Hawaii or New York or run away because he thinks that he can just go run away and it'll just all go away. I don't know if he committed the act. I don't know if he was involved in the cleanup, or I don't know if he just knows what happened, but he knows something and he's not talking to anyone. I mean, it was his house. It was, you know, everything. And it is a known fact that they had a verbal altercation hours before she died.
And where is that information coming from? Were there eyewitnesses of this?
Multiple eyewitnesses and police reports where he admits it.
Why do you suppose that he's being evasive if he doesn't have anything to do with this?
That's what I'm saying. If he didn't have anything to do with it, why are you trying to hide and not talk? Like, wouldn't you want your name cleared? Wouldn't you want it to go away by talking? Plus, there's a $1,000 Crime Stopper reward. Plus, there's a private family reward, too. So it's like, come on, dude.
Does he have something in his past that he might be afraid is going to come out if he starts talking with police about, I guess, any crime, including this, that he might have had some hand in?
I've wondered about that, too, because he has been to prison, I believe, before the whole incident with my mom. And then he's been to prison since then for drugs or firearms or something along those lines. So yeah, I mean, I think maybe like talking might incriminate him in some other stuff or something. So maybe that's why he's being quiet. But either way, he needs to talk.
So he was with your mom that night and they got into a verbal altercation. Any word on what the altercation was about?
Unfortunately, we don't know that. I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm trying to figure that out and like the exact timeline from like 7 to 2 or 3 in the morning, because I think she was first reported being found around 8 or 8:30, which means she was probably dumped a few hours before that. So, I mean, between probably like 2 and 6 or something was probably the time she was killed, is what I'm assuming. So we need a timeline leading up to that.
There's no medical examiner report or autopsy that you can reference?
I do have an autopsy, but it doesn't really tell you much.
Right. It doesn't give you like an estimated time of death?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
By the way, this is a big old giant binder, all my info I have on my mom. So.
Yeah.
Well done. Looks like a thick case file.
Yep.
So, yes, I am curious. Have you reached out to anybody who might be able to help you in that arena independently, like maybe somebody who is a medical examiner?
Now, this was a little before I started getting a little more popular online and stuff, which I'm not popular yet, but I'm trying to get my mom's story out there. But I have contacted private labs and all that stuff, and they just kind of blow me off, kind of just like the newspaper and everything else. I mean, that's what's so frustrating, is I just get blown off so much. But one thing is, because I just got back from CrimeCon in Texas, there's Othram Forensics, and there's a guy, David Middleton. Sorry if I mess up his name.
Yeah, no, that's Othram Labs in Austin, Texas. David Middleman. Yeah, wonderful guy, wonderful organization.
And I met him in person. Thank you for correcting me. We actually sent some DNA samples to him. So hopefully he can do something, because he seems like a lot better than the resources we have here locally.
The great thing about Othram is that they work with law enforcement. So by the time they get to that level or that tier, you know, it's already legit. It's already something that can probably be used in court or used to at least issue a search warrant somewhere.
Exactly. And then also, somehow, I don't know if it was the billboard or one of the podcasts, but a local FBI agent saw the case too, and now they are involved. So now I have access to FBI level forensic testing.
Well, that is excellent. I did notice the billboards you did. I want to ask about that in a moment. Do you know what Othram has as far as a DNA sample?
I know they have a DNA sample. I think it's like some kind of mixed sample, and they're trying to separate it or something like that, which hasn't been able to be done before. And I think they might be able to do it now. Fingers crossed. That's what we're hoping for. So, I mean, David's amazing. I mean, if anyone can do it, he can.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And tell us a little bit about the billboards. How many billboards have you had put up, and who's paying for that?
I've had 2 billboards up. Actually, I paid for most of it. And then I had a few generous donations, which for like my birthday and Christmas and stuff, I said, hey, instead of buying me a present, please donate to the cause, you know, because I got to say, like, even flyers and stuff are not cheap to print out. One was up for like 3.5 months or something like that. And the other one was up for like 6 months. So it was a pretty penny, but it was every penny well spent. I'll tell you that. I was going to say, now when I hand out flyers, sometimes I get like, oh, I've seen your billboard or I've seen a podcast, which 6 months ago, I wasn't getting that response. So I'm doing my job, thank goodness. And I'll tell you what, part of the reason I'm doing this job is because my mother would do the exact same thing for me, if not more.
Can you tell us the location of the billboard and the reasons for putting the billboard where you did?
So the locations were strategic. One was fairly close to Jim's house, and, you know, you had to pass it. Everybody saw it. It was next to a coffee stand. So as you're getting your coffee, you're forced to sit there and stare at it. And the other one was right next to Jim's house. so he had to pass it every day, coming and leaving, and so did all of his friends.
Wow. Well, I like how forward that is. Is he still in the area?
For now, he is, because at least once a week, I hand him a flyer.
You hand him a flyer?
Yep. Sometimes he answers the door. Sometimes he doesn't. Sometimes he pretends he knows who I am, or like, sometimes he, you know, he's like, "Hi, Carly, give me the flyer." Other times he's like, "Who are you? What are you selling?" I'm like, "Well, I'm Carly Bodie and I'm selling you this." I mean, he knows who I am. He just plays games and I'll play them right back with him.
So every week or so you knock on his door or ring his bell and hand him a flyer?
I either hand him a flyer or I just leave white lilies on the porch.
What's the significance of those?
Lilies are like a death flower. Like that's what you bring to like a funeral. So
the level of thought that goes into that is impressive, by the way. And the, what's the word I'm looking for? Tenacity?
Vivacity, tenacity, yeah.
Yeah. You, just to be clear in my head, you walked, on a weekly basis, you walk up and knock on the door of the prime suspect in your mother's murder, and you hand that person a flyer. If they're not there, you leave them flowers that represent death, something you'd bring to a funeral.
Yep. He's ripped up the flyer in my face. He's brought it in. There's times I've taped it to his windshield because he won't take it. Yeah.
Has he ever reported you for like harassing you?
Because he's guilty of something. So of course he hasn't reported me. Tells me another thing. He's got to be guilty of something because he's not reporting me. So, I mean, come on now. Let's think about this rationally. He's got to be hiding something.
Does he run in any circles that involve people that he would confide in that you know of?
So I know for a fact that my mom's boyfriend at the time, when she left the house that weekend, I know that they still hang out because just a few weeks ago I saw them together. So I want my mom's boyfriend questioned again because I know he's got to know something. They initially just told him like, "Oh, hey, Karen's dead." They didn't even question him or anything like that. And what the police had come to believe, not the police, I guess the current detective and myself for many years have been saying, we think more than one person's involved, either in killing her or cleaning it up. There's more than one person involved. There has to be. Looking at all the evidence and circumstances, realistically, that's the case.
Because there would be more evidence if not, or?
You would think so, or like, yeah, I mean, and it looks like there's like a few different signatures or whatever. I mean, someone obviously like stripped her of all her clothing, maybe of like of evidentiary value, like trying to get rid of evidence. But yet she was just tossed on the side of the road. So that is a completely different signature or way of operation than the other person. Like, and at that time, back in 2007, Jim's house is kind of known as like a flop house, like a drug house or whatever. And so I'm sure he had a lot of cronies that would do whatever he wanted for some drugs. Like, "Hey, go do this for me. You know, here's some drugs. You know, hey, rip up this carpet or go throw this garbage bag away or whatever, you know." And people probably wouldn't ask questions because they wanted their drugs.
Was there any indication of sexual abuse?
At the time, the coroner said no, but I don't think they really looked into it too much. So I would say the official record is no, but I would say inconclusive.
What are the drugs in the area?
Well, I mean, it is Washington, so pot was the first legal ones, but I don't think that counts.
Yeah, real drug.
Yeah, exactly. Illicit drug around here is either meth or heroin, and it's heroin kind of, but it's meth. I mean, there's people that manufacture it and sell it. I mean, it's big and bad around here. And it's been like that since about late 80s, early 90s.
Is that something that's been connected to Jim Hunt?
I believe so. Yeah, he's been arrested for drugs and everything. Mm-hmm. His mm-hmm. house is a known drug house.
The house that you still knock on.
Yeah.
So factor that into the equation.
Oh, I have a taser and mace and everything with me every time I go. And a crazy little dog too, so.
You bring the dog with you? And tell us about, are you starting a nonprofit or attempting to start a nonprofit?
Yes, I am. The paperwork is about to be filed. It costs a lot of money, and you have to make sure everything is correct. So if a period is in the wrong spot or something, then you have to refile and you have to pay money to refile, which is not cheap. But yes, I'm trying to start a nonprofit for my mom, but for others as well. Like, my goal and my hope is for this to get solved. I know in reality, there's a good chance it might not ever be solved. And I wouldn't say I'm okay with it, but I accept it, even though obviously I want it to be solved. But I'm in this for other families too. I'm in this for other families of missing and murdered people. I'm in this for people of crisis. I mean, my mother was obviously in a crisis. She had just gotten in a fight with her boyfriend. She needed somewhere to go. There needs to be a bigger net for people like this. Like, and just more awareness and more accountability. I feel like she slipped through the net, and I think the media kind of controlled the narrative and made the police kind of not care. And I want to change that. I mean, I want to start a nonprofit. I'm going and changing law. I want every cold case to be looked at every 2 years minimum, mandatory, by new eyes. Why is that not being done?
Oh, it's a great point. And we know that the Vermont State Police have a cold case specialist division, which consists of a couple to a few citizens, not individuals that have law enforcement backgrounds, but people who are interested in research and cold cases. And we were told by one of the detectives, a sergeant detective from the state police, that they're invaluable.
Exactly. I mean, that's preferably my hope. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it was disgusting. They had to blow off the dust after 7 years of not looking at my mom's case. 7 years. I mean, that's just, and think about all the other cases too, not just my mom's, that haven't been looked at in this county, in this state, nationwide. It's unacceptable. And I want to change that. And I want to report to people like myself and, you know, others in a similar situation. And I felt I was alone for so long, especially before the whole CrimeCon CrowdSolve thing. Like, yes, if people asked me about my mom, I would tell them, but then I got the weird coddly, like, oh, you're that girl person, you know. I didn't realize there was such a big true crime community until I started putting myself out there more. And it's like, wow, people do actually kind of care. Like, this is amazing. Like, this is what we need, and this is what I want to help other people do. Like,
yeah, that's one of the last questions that I had, just what your feelings about the whole citizen detective true crime community. What how do you feel about that? There's this big uprising, this swell of activity that's been going on, and a lot of it's generated from people who haven't experienced the type of tragedy that you've experienced, but they're putting a lot of themselves into it. What's your thoughts on that? I mean, I guess I kind of know based on this interview, but
I think it's amazing, because I'll tell you what, there's leads that my detective wouldn't have followed up on if I didn't call and give them a heads up. And I'm just a regular citizen that happened to find stuff out. And if I wouldn't have given him that information, he never would have known it. And same with probably tens of thousands of other armchair sleuths is the term, I think. Same here. Like, I really respect what they do and everything. And there's a few people that I've met at not just the CrowdSolve, but other CrimeCon events that truly have a passion for this. Like, they really do care. You have those jerkos that are just in it for the horror and gore or whatever. And I get that too, but you also get the people that really care. And it's like, wow. Like, even if they don't have any personal experience, they still just want to help because they're empathetic or sympathetic or what have you. And it's amazing the community that I've found through all this. Like, I definitely feel like I have more of a platform and people listen to me more. And it's not about me, it's about my mom, and it's about every other family that's going through what I'm going through. And that's what I'm trying to get across, is people can talk and have a platform and get their cases heard.
And where can people donate for justice for Karen Bodine?
On the website, which is KarenBodine.com. I might have a different website for a new one, but we're about to have merchandise out. So, like, the t-shirt that I have on, the mask that I have, there'll be mugs, there'll be like little athletic bags, sports bags, like grocery bags. Like, you can buy stuff, and 100% of the proceeds go towards billboards, flyers, all that stuff. Because don't get me wrong, I mean, I'll spend every penny I will until I'm broke doing this, but I'm getting close to doing that. Cause I mean, these billboards aren't cheap. It cost me $10,000 just for the billboards. So, but where you can donate, I just want to make sure I get it. It's venmo.com/Carly-Bodine. I can text it to you too, so you can have it. I know if you go to KarenBodine.com, there's a donation button and the Facebook, kind of a mouthful, but the Facebook one is Karen Bodine, My Mother's Unsolved Homicide. There's also a link there too where you can donate as well. If anyone wants stickers or flyers, please feel free to contact you guys or me or whatever. And I would love to hand out flyers and stickers.
Man, I hope that this leads to something because you've put so much work into it and, you know, you've got an incredible energy about yourself and what you're bringing to it. And hopefully we get to meet at CrimeCon in Vegas. If you want, you're more than welcome to join us on a panel, or we'll do a, you know, like a podcast studio episode with you there.
I was doing in Texas, I was hanging out with James and the captain and my friend from Colton Cab. I was just kind of skipping from podcast to podcast because I knew a bunch of the people. I was like, well, this is where I feel most comfortable. I'll just hang out with you guys. Oh, actually, quick story. Yeah, I was 1 pound, 9 ounces when I was born. My mom and I were both going to die. And the doctor called my grandma and they're like, which one do you want to survive? If it comes down to that, which it's coming down to. And my grandma sat there for a minute and she was at work, by the way. And she goes, well, I guess my daughter saved my daughter, which I mean, I can't blame my grandma. I mean, I would save my kid over the baby, you know your kid way longer. Well, they put me in an incubator. I kicked the incubator lid off and I ripped an IV out of my arm just because I wanted to be around my mom. And I don't have the newspaper article with me because I'm not at home, but she has her finger and my hand doesn't even reach around her finger. And so I've been a fighter since day one, and my mom taught me that and I got it from her. So.
Wow. That's
great story.
Yeah, that is a great story. Incredibly fitting, actually.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's why I should add it in there. I mean,
yeah,
that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I mean, that's the thing is if something tragic happened to me, my mom, I mean, I'm fighting tooth and nail, but I can't even imagine what my mom would be doing if it was the other way around. So, I mean, I'm obligated in the best way to do the same for her.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.